Ooh, my deep feelers. You all are the ones who experience through feeling. You are the ones that are so tuned in, so tapped in that you can feel others' pains. And because you're so intuitive, you have these gifts that you can actually pour back into other people. And you have the gifts of seeing things that most people cannot see. And it can be a detriment, but it can also be one of the greatest things that you can do for other people.
Welcome to the Purple Stars Podcast. I'm Sarah, your host, and you are in for a real treat today. Our guest is a world-renowned emotional health advocate, human connection expert, serial entrepreneur, performance coach, and she has written multiple best-selling books. And above all, she is a person with a very kind heart. Please welcome Dr. Nita Bouchon.
Ah, Sarah, so good to meet you. And I'm so glad we're doing this. Thanks for having me.
Me too. Thank you so much for being on our show. We love your podcast. We love your books and everything you're putting out there. I'm very excited, and I also am very impressed when I looked up on your journey. You used to be a doctor. You used to be a dentist. You were running a multi-million dollar practice and then changed your career. What has helped you? What has helped you to take the leap of faith to also have the courage to change from a job that's in a society, you know, has a very great label, people love it, and also what helped you to redefine yourself? Because I see it with a lot of people. They tie their jobs so closely to their identity that they really struggle with any changes when it comes to jobs.
Yeah. So, wow, it's such a loaded question. I feel like that was a big struggle for me. I think for many years, I think that, you know, I knew that I had just recently recorded a solo cast on this, just kind of going through some of the pivotal points, because it's been about 8 years since I walked that path. In 2015, I sold my, you know, lucrative dental practice. And there was, you know, right before that time, I was going through a lot personally. I had, you know, a few years before that, I had left a very toxic an abusive relationship. And so I was going through so many personal kind of just uprooting. And in that time, when you hit rock bottom and you're just questioning everything, you're questioning, you know, your personal life, you're questioning your love life, you're questioning, well, what am I doing this all for? You're questioning your purpose. And I think for that time when I was starting to rebuild myself, I started to build this confidence in myself that was just never there beforehand. And it made me question, well, what am I really doing here? And I was good at it. And I was really good because I was able to build my confidence to that level. And I was also allowing myself to be led by other coaches. And that's when I got, you know, all different kinds of support, from therapists to healers, body workers, shamans. I mean, you name it, I said yes to it, because I was really kind of in that dark place. But I also knew that if I wanted to focus more in myself, I needed to let others in, that I just didn't know everything. And it allowed me to, you know, really create a thriving business. But it also begged the question of, okay, what else is out there? What else is out there? Am I just meant to be in this like tiny little box, you know, working on amazing people? But I was so much more consumed of, ooh, how can I build this talent? Other young junior doctors that were working with me, and maybe some of them were older than me, but like, how can I like get them to like have my kind of style? Because we ended up building this, it was like a dental spa in many ways. I mean, people are not really you know, they don't really look forward to going to the dentist. And we actually reframe that. So I was thinking, I'm like, how can I do this? Or what more can I do? And at the same time, you know, breaking this, this news to my family, my aunt, who was like my bonus mom, my Lola was still around at this time, my other aunts. And they were like, they thought I was crazy. They're like, are you in this, in a cult? Like what? You know, you've achieved the dreams that like people haven't even done. And this was, you know, before I was 30. And I was kind of like, there is something next on the horizon. And at the same time, I had already started to mentor younger women, and I did start a nonprofit. And I was actually speaking and raising money at fundraisers. And it was a small nonprofit called Independent Awakening. But that really was like my entryway out into speaking on stages, you know, motivating other people, inspiring other people. And that really led to this unknown path, because I didn't know coaching was that. I didn't know that was going to be the next iteration, but I had to say yes. And was it the scariest thing? Oh gosh, yeah. Was it, did my friends and family think I was crazy? 1,000%. Did I lose family members that, you know, were like, what are you doing? You know, you spend so much on loans for school. How are you going to pay all that back? You know, so they didn't believe in me at that time. And I think I needed to really believe in what I was doing, even though I had no idea what I was doing. And I feel like none of us do, right? But I feel like I had to trust that gut instinct and my intuition of, okay, what feels really good. And I knew I could make money because I had to learn how to do that early on. I had a really very interesting upbringing. And so I knew that was going to be fine, but the direction, there was no linear path. It was like all different brushstrokes and waves, but here we are.
I love how you described it with different brushstrokes, because I think everyone, like a lot of people, have romanticized the idea of a path that it's very linear and you go from one chapter to the other. While actually most of us, it's, yeah, exactly. We all wish, but the truth is a zigzag. And that zigzag is actually what makes us who we are, and also gets us closer every day to being of service and to walking in the path of purpose and to be fulfilled and also to be happy. And I always say, like, every rejection is a redirection. And sometimes the rejection comes from being in a relationship or being at a job where we feel, doesn't feel that good anymore. And the best parameter and North Star is always to say, how does this make me feel?
Yeah.
And yeah. That's why I really love that you change your path despite everyone in your family saying, are you crazy? What are you doing?
Yeah, it was a roller coaster of emotions, but I think, you know, for anybody who's listening to this who needs that inspiration or even just that nudge of what do you think you could be doing in the next 3 years? And when one of my, you know, advisors, mentors, somebody I really looked up to at the time asked me, and they weren't, you know, in dentistry. They were just somebody that, you know, took a chance on me. And this was somebody that I highly respected, and they just posed the question. And I hadn't thought about it in that light of, wait, am I going to be doing this in 3 years? I just knew that I knew what I wanted to do. And what I wanted to do was I wanted to have more freedom. I wanted to feel more free, and I wanted to roam the world. You know, I grew up really early. I had to work really hard between the ages of 10 to 19 because I lost my parents, because I lost my brother. And it was a very tragic scenario. And there were a lot of things that, you know, I couldn't do. I grew up super early. And so I would always dream about taking time off because I was one of those, you know, smart kids that went straight to college, never took a break, was constantly working. I started working when I was 14 years old. And so I literally would envision myself like, okay, I want to just, you know, go and roam in Europe and just like lay on the beaches and go to Thailand. And I was able to do all of that. Yet I wanted to embrace more of that freedom. And when I would think about my practice, and even though as much, you know, cash flow money it would bring in, I felt like there was an anchor holding me down and holding me down into the city that I was born in, which was Chicago. And I knew there were wings behind me that were like, you need to fly. You need to go, you need to fly, you need to test things out, you need to just try. And, you know, I thought to myself, I'm like, and this was the same person that asked me this, was a great dear mentor and advisor. And they were like, Neetha, you know, do you think you'll have regrets if you don't do what you want to do in the next 3 to 5 years? And I'm like, I don't know what that is yet, but I know it's probably not what I'm doing now. And it literally just, those words fell out of my mouth. I didn't realize it. It was like, oh, okay. I just said that. And it was like, you know, you just realize what you just shared. And that's really what was the beginning blocks of me beginning to shift and wanting to change careers.
What has helped you, or what is an advice for someone who's in a similar situation? They know they don't want to do anymore what they're doing right now, but they don't know yet what they want to do instead. Because I think a lot of people are in this scenario. What is an advice where they can take the leap of faith to walk on the path, like start a path without knowing what the path actually is?
Yeah. So I would say, you know, subscribe to a year of yes. And if you can't do a year of yes, I would say subscribe to, you know, 6 months. And, you know, I talk about this in my book, That Suck Now What? And it's all about, if you get into the now what section, which is the section 3, where you are, maybe you've trialed and erred a couple of things. Maybe you failed. Maybe you had an idea for something, but you just didn't have the stamina to kind of like work itself out. Or maybe you just got bored and you wanted to do something else. So I say, challenge yourself. And over the next 30 days, as I talk about in my book, you know, try different things, because when you are getting yourself out of your comfort level and you're exposing yourself to, you know, good stress, right? Things that kind of get you out of your comfort level. I know for a while I started improv, you know, at Second City in Chicago. These were people who wanted to train to be like on Saturday Night Live. They wanted to be comedians. And for me, I was just terrified to like have a conversation with one of my employees. Because I needed to fire them. And for me, it was like such a game changer. And that really catapulted, that is a skill set that to this day I still use, even if I'm, you know, speaking to a group of 100 or 1,000 in the same way, because it's like, all right, we don't have things in our control, and it's okay to play, and it's okay to fumble, because you'll find your words and you'll get back at it. And to say yes to that experience not only helped for me to become a better leader because I wasn't so rigid, but it was also for me to not take myself so seriously that I could play. And playfulness, it's what I talk about now. It's the keys to resiliency. We're not taking ourselves so seriously. And so that's the first piece of advice, is to just say yes, try things out. You might like a few things. Things might scare the crap out of you, but say yes to them and see how you feel as a result. So that's the first thing. And then the second thing is, you know, do that envisioning exercise that my mentor did with me. Where do you see yourself in 3 years? And in fact, for your audience, if and when you get the book, That Suck Now What, you can actually go to neethabhushan.com/resources. And there is a 60-page free guide, and it takes you through this like envisioning exercise. It's a whole self-care kit, but it's a self-coaching kit as well, where you can go through a lot of the exercises that are also in the book, but this just goes deeply and deeper. But envision yourself. Where do you see yourself? Do you see yourself living in the same place in 3 years? Do you see yourself vacationing in the same places? Or maybe taking that big dream trip, like I was saying, that I wanted to be land somewhere in Europe. I finally was able to do all of those things. But because I was envisioning, okay, where do you see yourself spending your time? What do you see yourself doing? If you can't answer, what do you see yourself doing? Is it what you're doing now? If it's a no, then that's where you start to play. Mm-hmm. And the last thing that I would say to this is also, start to ask people who are the closest to you, what is it that you like about me? Or what is it that really stands out about me? Because you might not be able to find out, and you might say, I don't know what my strengths are. But I bet if you ask the three people that are closest to you, what is your gift? What is your secret sauce? You can send them a text today, right after. What is it that like, what is it about me that you really enjoy? Or what do you think that I bring to the table? And this, these should be people, maybe it's your family, but for some people, it might be your mentors, your teachers, your colleagues, a boss, a childhood buddy, somebody that you can say that they're a confidant or that you respect their opinions about you. Because that is where you get that sweet sauce. And that's literally going to be what leads you to, that's your through line in your thread, that what leads you to your next iteration or your next evolution, your next chapter.
What did the three people that you asked about yourself back then answer?
Oh, that's a good question. So I think the through line was, you are amazing with people. You are such a person that thrives on connection, and you are really good at connecting people. You're really good at making people feel seen. And so these were things that I just thought were second nature. I'm like, well, yeah, like I've been able to do that since I was a kid. I don't know. That's kind of, yeah, it's easy for me to make friends. It's easy for me to walk into a room and I don't get awkward. I just try to understand other people. It could be because I have a psychology background. I don't know. But I remember, you know, just as a little girl, it was easy for me to, I wanted everybody to be friends. You know, I wanted everybody to sit in a circle and we could play duck, duck, goose or, musical chairs, because that was the thing, right? Like I wanted everyone to be close together. And it could also be because of my upbringing, like losing my parents and brother had a huge impact on me around family, around community. And I've always been a community builder. I just never realized that that was a superpower of mine. I didn't realize that that was, and many times we downplay our gifts and we downplay the things that we're really good at because it's easy for us. And I'm not saying we're downplaying some of our strengths because it's easy and we don't like doing it. These are things that come so naturally to you that sometimes you don't pay close attention to it because it's so easy for you. But for somebody else, you know, they don't have what you have, and that's, they have something else and that's their gift. And so, but it's so easy for us as, you know, to own our truest strengths. But when we do, that becomes what revolutionizes how we show up in the world. Because if we double down on that, you know, if I just double down on talking to people all day, you know, great. Like I love doing that. And I do that now for a living. And I guess you can say I did that as a cosmetic dentist because, you know, I would chatter it up all the time. And I helped people, you know, their smiles shift. But I only do that now from the internal side instead of the external actual manual labor of it. And so I feel like then you'll start to notice the patterns of why you select the kind of industries that you select or what you're more drawn to. And if we start to, you know, build that intuitive muscle of, okay, yeah, I don't know why I like this thing, but I like this thing, or it's like really making me come alive, and like following that feeling, that is, that's the best thing that you can do for your soul.
Anita, I think you're a great example because your path shows that our superpower, like when we relate it to business now, can be used in many different industries. And it can be used in so many different facets. And in the end, like in school, you probably, your superpower was, as you said, like including all the other kids into different games. Later on, your gift was using it as a dentist. Now it's as a mother, as a high performance coach, as a podcaster. So I think it's making sure, because our superpowers also, when we use them and put them to use, it makes us feel alive. And I think the most important is that we allow ourselves to use that superpower in every area of our life. And that actually brings me to my next question. For a lot of people, their superpower actually is to feel things very deeply. But because they don't know yet how to use that sensitivity, it often comes across for themselves and maybe also others as a flaw, as a curse. It might not really, you know, it might limit them. What is your advice for people who actually have that ability to reframe their mindset and also to use it for leverage and really tap into the superpower so they can use it for personal growth and also fulfillment?
Ooh, my deep feelers. Yes, yes. that it's a, you know, it's a beautiful sign if you are a water sign, or if you are, because I'm a water sign as well. So I feel deeply as well. But I think it's how you alchemize it, right? Like you all are the ones who experience through feeling. You are the ones that are so tuned in, so tapped in that you can feel others' pains. And because you're so intuitive, you have these gifts that you can actually pour back into other people. And you have the gifts of seeing things that most people cannot see. And it can be a detriment, but it can also be one of the greatest things that you can do for other people, because you feel so deeply that it's going to benefit you for the long run to have your own practices of grounding, to have your own practices of, you know, nourishing back to yourself, so that you can begin to share some of your superpowers, which not very many people have, which is a great thing. My son is like this. And, you know, we're already allowing him to, you know, have those sacred spaces where he can do whatever his art form is. Because a lot of times you may not want to be around people, because that's where your greatest senses come alive. That's where you being kind of alone in your own mastery, or in your own artwork, or in your own muse of whatever that looks like to you, that's where you have to figure out, all right, what makes me come alive? What draws my inspiration? What allows me to get creative? And at the same time, what drains my energy? If I am so attuned to other people's pains, am I going to keep watching the news? Am I going to keep responding to toxic people? To know how to shut down your boundaries, because you are in, to protect yourself so that you can operate from that highest level, which is tuning into your gifts of sight, of being able to see things even for other people, and bringing those gifts out into the world without causing your own gifts as a detriment. So allowing yourself all of the good nutrients so that you can thrive and show up in the highest possible way to be of service to other people.
And I so totally agree with, it's important to see what gives us energy and also what drains our energy. I always love to tell my clients, do a weekly energy audit. You know, take a piece of paper, divide it into parts, put a plus on the left and write everything down that is currently giving you energy. And it can be a person, a song, a prayer, breathing, certain foods, certain habits. And then also go to the minus. You know, what is it that is currently draining your energy? What makes you feel depleted? And that can be something small like, oh, I'm using my phone right after I'm getting up from bed. Or it could be something bigger, a friend that constantly is calling and only is talking about herself and never asks me how I am feeling. So those energy audits are really, really, really important. And that actually brings me to my next question, because a lot of people struggle with doing energy audits because they don't like to sit with the reality, their pain, and their emotions. And you wrote this fantastic book, and you are a testimony of how it is to sit with your pain, to acknowledge it, and also to move forward with joy. Because as you mentioned before, in the beginning, you got out of an abusive marriage. And by the age of 19, you lost your parents. And I think also your brother, if I'm not mistaken. Mm-hmm. So you have been for a lot of loss, both for your body, mind, and soul. Nevertheless, you are full of life, full of color. You are full of joy. Mm-hmm. What has helped you to apply the mindset of that sucked, now what? And also, how did your life change by implementing that?
Whew, yes. Wow. I feel like, you know, it's been so many lifetimes of, and lifetimes ago, of kind of going through the depths and the darkness of that pain. And to be able to, you know, see the contrast and the paradox of life, because the contrast and the paradox of life can be really heavy, but it can also be really light. And I'm, like you said, one of those testimonies of, this is how I operate. It doesn't have to always be dark, and it's not always going to be light, but we can appreciate the light through the darkness. We can appreciate, you know, the darkness through the light as well. It's, and when I really understood this idea of duality and this idea of, you know, the life's paradoxes, I mean, obviously I was feeling through it, through some of the stories that I share in the book and the different seasons and stages of life. You know, when this was going on in my teenage years, I was in survival mode. I didn't know how or what was going to be that next thing. And, you know, as a result, I would hold on to, you know, unhealthy relationships, unhealthy, you know, people in life, because I wanted to have something in my control, because everything was just like out of my control. And the four major things that I write about in the book on how to create your own bounce factor. And what I mean by bouncing back through hard times or bouncing forward, and because I like to call it flying forward, is you can only fly forward when you are allowing yourself to bounce, not break, right? Because we're not trying to be as strong as nails or as tough as nails. And I try to redefine what I mean by resiliency, because if we think resiliency, we're thinking of a bounce factor. If we go back to what the word means in Latin, it means resiliere, which means to bounce. It doesn't mean to break. And what does bouncing actually mean? It means to have agility, have, you know, that softness, have compassion for yourself, allow yourself to flex. And we're not meant to be sitting in the darkness for a really long time. I know some of us, if we're going through that season, allow yourself to feel. There's another handful of us where we just bypass and we don't allow ourselves to feel. I was in that boat for many, many years until I could no longer look away. And I had to really go through the depths and the darkness and really embrace my shadows. But I think that, you know, it starts with accepting it. And that's what I share. You know, the first step of creating your bounce factor, this is in part two of the book, is, you know, we are having to accept our past. Maybe it's our upbringing. Maybe it's, you know, the houlda, you shoulda, woulda, coulda, all of those things that weren't in are in alignment or wasn't in our control. And, you know, those expectations that we thought, to make peace with those and to reconcile our upbringing, whatever that looks like. So that's, you know, part one. And part two is, I think I spoke about, you know, this and trying new things, but, you know, applying more of that good stress, right? Like, stepping into the uncomfort and the discomfort. And for me, it was like, ooh, feeling this grief is feeling really painful. Like, this is awful. And it was overwhelming bouts of grief, but I needed to let other people in, and allowing myself to work with different types of coaches and healers and shamans, and kind of, you know, surrounding myself with what I like to call a soul support posse, people who, you know, want the best interest for me, but they are also holding space and they know how to hold space for whatever it is, the kicking, crying, screaming, moaning, groaning, allowing yourself to move through those emotions so that we're not staying there. And which brings me to part three, which is embracing your emotional capacity to feel. And I think a lot of times, you know, we can get so stuck on the rumination of what didn't go well, or, you know, I wish I could bring them back, but the chances are is like it, you know, this is where we are right now. And so all we could do is, to feel this stress or to feel this discomfort, and to know that it takes 60 to 90 seconds to fully feel an emotion. And if we're allowing ourselves to cry through it, to scream, to moan and groan, I have a whole different relationship to it because I have children now. And so it's a whole thing. We practice this piece almost daily because they're toddlers, they're little. And then finally, you know, really attuning to your, and the fourth part of this is really attuning into your radical self-awareness of, all right, you know, where am I in this stage and season of life? Who do I need to surround myself? What do I need to nourish myself with? What do I actually need? Do I need a lot of people, or do I just need to be alone? And is that going to prevent me from taking action? Can I allow myself a day for myself, but then tomorrow, will I be able to go out again and go out in the jungle? Because, you know, that's where we're strengthening our bounce factor. We're strengthening our resiliency. We're strengthening our muscles for heartbreak, for when things don't go our way. And we're allowing ourselves, all right, the muscle to go through that so that we can show up and share our gifts collectively with the world, because we've already been able to do our own work. And so that's that in a nutshell.
I so, so, so love that. And I love also how you share in your book that we prep ourselves and build our resilience for the hard times. Because I do think it's important not just to wait for something to happen and then we are like, okay, now we got to build the resilience. But actually, it's a little bit like a marathon. You know, like you got to train and train and train and train. And then when the marathon is there, then you can use your resilience to actually go get through it. And I love what you said about, you know, building that muscle of resilience. I like to call it muscle on a daily basis. Mm-hmm. And it can be, as you said, try something that scares you, do something that gets you out of your comfort zone. And a lot of people, I see a lot of people say, oh no, I'm already working out all the time. That's already taking me outside my comfort zone. And I always explain, well, it only takes you outside your comfort zone if you do a certain amount of rep where it really burns, or if you're actually sometimes also not really liking all of it. Because if you're getting up in the morning, you're like, yeah, I'm going to yoga. It's not like, it's great for your body, great for your mind, but you're not really stepping outside of your comfort zone. So you gotta look for that little edge of really like stepping outside your comfort zone. And I think for the resilience, it's also really important to step outside your comfort zone emotionally, mentally, and also physically to really get the whole picture. And that leads me to the next question. I found out you are also a practitioner of both Ayurveda and functional medicine, and I am a big fan of both. Could you give a little tip what people can use out of this wisdom to build their resilience and also to overcome certain fears when it comes to hardship in their life?
Yeah. So, well, one of the institutes that we have is rooted in Ayurvedic practices. And while I am a wellness geek, I would say that, you know, I'm not a functional medicine practitioner, but I do love, I love all things rooted in Eastern philosophies. And I think, you know, because of my background, of seeing so many people go through, you know, medical hardships, that I think many times it is going back to our roots. And it's one of the reasons why, you know, one of our coaching institutes is called Dharma Coaching Institute. It is rooted in Ayurveda. It's rooted in, you know, the Vedas, the Vedic philosophy of coming back to our Dharma and to really question, you know, are we living in full actualization of our Dharma? Are we actually, you know, living in truth to who we are becoming? And I think that's a big question to ask us at whatever season and stage of your life. Dharma is just, you know, your soul's purpose. And Dharma is kind of, you know, the, you know, it's from one of the oldest, philosophies in the world and, you know, body of science or whatever you want to call it. But it really starts with, if you have gone through a life transition, if you have gone through something painful, if you have gone through or overcome an adversity, how do you want to use that going forward? And the Japanese might call it your ikigai or your purpose or, you know, your fulfillment of one's life or the meaning of one's life. You know, for Ayurveda, Dharma is what is your soul's purpose in this season and stage of life? And, you know, what are you called to do next? And, you know, I wouldn't say that this is a soul assignment. You know, some people might say it might be your soul assignment, but to tune back into, you know, what were some of those things that made you come alive? Maybe as a child, what were some of those things that maybe the closest people to you have always shared about you, what they love about you? Maybe that's kind of getting you closer and closer to getting towards your Dharma so that you can live in alignment with whatever your truth is. And for me, you know, when I recognized that, I knew that my truth was no longer dentistry. And, you know, maybe it was for a little while, but I was ready to kind of go on my next battle or my next, you know, hill to climb. And for you, it might be different. Maybe it's starting something for the first time or really putting yourself out there, but really tune into, you know, what were some of the challenges around you that you've overcome, that you've gone through that has led you to, you know, this season and stage of life where that could actually contribute to your becoming or your Dharma.
Since we are a podcast for both personal development lovers and also animal lovers, how do you think animals can help us to live our soul purpose, to find it, and also to stay true to it?
Oh my goodness. It's so interesting you're asking me this question because my son has been so trying to sell his parents on getting his... getting a pet. And he actually even put a dog on the vision board, on his vision board, because this is kind of, we started to do this ritual. He's five now. And well, I think that, you know, with pets, I think that it is, you know, they are one of the most calming for our nervous system. And, you know, remembering that they are love and they are light and they are going to love you unconditionally. And they are also going to be kind of these creatures that spark your own natural, innate confidence. They are going to love you no matter what. And that's why we love our pets. And that's why our pets sometimes some of us spend more time with our pets than we do with humans, because they just get us. And what if, you know, we can utilize this medicine from our pets, from our fuzzy little creatures, to really tune into, you know, the love that they see within us, that we can actually see that for ourselves and utilize those gifts to take our big walk in the world with whatever that looks like. And I think many times, you know, even our pets come into our life to show us an aspect of ourselves, to reveal an aspect of ourselves. And I think that, you know, most of the time we don't pay attention to those signs. And I would encourage you and invite you to pay attention to when you are, you know, having, when you're spending time with animals, or maybe you just encounter, I have a really amazing book that talks about this, I've had her on my podcast, and, she's brilliant. But Allison Charles has a book all around like animal power medicine. And you know, whether you're kind of running into different birds in the park, or, you know, like the other day I had to look this up because there was a moth, literally, it was like the most beautiful moth I had ever seen. And it was inside my house and I was getting body work done, and I'm like, and it fell out of the chair, and it was like, it had golden like stripes on it, and it was like, it had like black dots. And I'm like, what is this thing? But basically I looked up at her book and it was like, oh, okay, there's a message here for us. And so the wisdom of animals speaking to us in different ways is such a beautiful spiritual connection that we have if we pay attention to the signs. And I know that for me, it was one of the biggest things that I would get, you know, doves. And I always thought that, oh, okay, my mom or my parents, you know, they have a message for me. And it would just be in certain times of the year, but for years it was doves. And so now you actually have, you know, a book, and she even has flashcards too that kind of take you through these. But I think that we can't underestimate the power of these, you know, these animals and their gifts and their messages that they have for us.
Nita, thank you so much. I'm so touched by how you described this. And also thank you for suggesting the book. I'll also put this in our show notes. I'd love to talk to you so much longer, but I know we need to end our conversation sharp so you can pick up your son. I want to thank you so much for hopping onto our show. I hope we'll have a follow-up, because I actually have so many more questions, which we will cover next time. Thank you for inspiring us to be human. And thank you for inspiring us that we can have joy in our life, and that we're also allowed to have joy despite all the hardship we have experienced, and that we can be inspired by anything around us, and that we, you know, like, it's a sign for everyone to follow their heart and their soul purpose.
Oh, 100%. And Sarah, you are an amazing interviewer, and I'm just so grateful our paths crossed. So thank you for having me today.
Thank you so much. It's a wrap for today, everyone. Thanks for tuning in. If you loved the conversation as much as we did, please share it on Instagram, and also tag Nita and both us to keep the conversation going. And we see you next Wednesday.